And coming up next is a little chat with Don Sutherland on Solidarity Breakfast this morning. G'day, Don. How are you?
Hey, Annie. Hello to you and all your listeners. Great to be back and talking with you again.
Yeah. Now, you've been looking at the National Wages Review, and you were telling me you were having a look at four of the submissions in particular.
Yes. That's dead right. There are 28 submissions to this year's annual wage review, and but I think there's four, impossible to talk about all of them, of course, so we'll just skip briefly through four of them.
And, of course, we'll tell people that, of course, the National Wages Review is all about setting the minimum wage.
Well, yes, it sets the national minimum wage and also the minimum rates. Any increases in the minimum rates for each classification in all of the 122, I think it is, industrial awards. And those minimum rates, of course, also, whatever they are, they determine the situation that happens to a lot of people who, on an individual basis, a personal basis, come to an arrangement with their employer who's willing to offer them a dollar or so an hour more, or 50 cents, or $1.50, because they want to keep those workers with them. So whatever is going to happen out of the annual wage review is a big deal for literally millions of workers, of course, with its flow-on effects to family members and the community.
And also flow-on effects for the setting of the rate for Social Security.
Yes, indeed. A number of pensions, including, of course, the age pension, they are set at a relativity level to movements in the weekly wage. And so whenever there is an increase in the minimum rates, that has an impact on the overall level of the average wage. And then that has implications for how the pension might move, quite apart from, in the case of the pension, also the various cost of living indexes that they also use.
So what are the four submissions you are most interested in?
Well, the four are the Australian government itself, the Australian Council of Trade Unions, the Australian Industry Group, which is one of several and perhaps the most significant of the employer organisations. And then the other one I thought that was interesting is the Australian Catholic Council for Employment Relations. And I'll explain why I think their submission is interesting in a moment. The gutshot is that when you look at all of the submissions, but those four in particular, the Fair Work Commission expert panel has got a range of 0% through to 5%. So that's the sort of ambit, if you like, of all of the claims coming across the 28 submissions. The zero is from one of the other employer organisations, to be honest, I forget which one. But the submission from the Australian Industry Group, which is arguably the most significant, is for 2.8% or less, although they have also reserved their right to adjust that downwards or upwards in the light of further processes in the whole thing. The Australian government has not stuck a number. They've said, however, that the outcome should make sure that low-paid workers do not go backwards. The Australian Catholic Council for Employment Relations proposes 4.9%, which is $43.30 a week, and would increase the national minimum wage on that basis from, that's $43.30 per week, from $883 to $926, as it turns out. Now, the Australian Council of Trade Unions is proposing 5%. retrenchment. There is no industrial struggle at all. Low-income workers have not really been consulted about by any union in any significant way about what the claim should be. It's just been worked out really by economists, and then there is a political judgment made about, well, what's achievable and what isn't. Why it's only 5% remains a bit of a mystery to me, because I don't think there's much catch-up in that.
No, in fact, it's a wages cut, isn't it?
Well, no, I think that would still maintain, at least maintain, over that would actually lead to a marginal improvement in the standard of living. But in terms of past decisions, in which most of which have been less less supportive of maintaining the standard of living, it doesn't provide for catch-up. That's my assessment of it at the present time. Nevertheless, 5% is what it's going to be, and that's, in a sense, what you're going to hear lots of blather saying that it's excessive.
Well, I can jump in here and say, first we'll all be ruined, and then we'll have the headline with the dollar amount that's going to be increased, and then we'll all be ruined.
Yes. Yeah, that's all. That. Well, that's going to be driven by the employers.
Yeah.
And, of course, the major media organisations that rally around them and help them do that. It starts with the Australian Financial Review, spreads through the Australian, and then there are key operatives, Guns for Hire, who are, you know, ex-economics officers for the banks. They're now working as private consultants, all that sort of stuff. They swing in behind and say it's going to cause all sorts of problems, including they're not saying much at the moment. They're not being critical so much on the inflation front, but they are saying it's going to cause unemployment. That seems to be the one they go. But so far, no evidence of that at all.
Well, there never is. It's always the same story. They don't even change their score sheets. Can you give me some understanding, or and my listeners some understanding of your understanding of the ACTU's reasoning behind the 5%?
Yeah, well, I think the main issue for the ACTU is to win a claim through persuasion and polite consultation that is achievable. And I think when I go through, I confess I've not read all, would you believe, 541 pages
wow.
in that submission with, you know, an encyclopedia, really, of information.
Why is it so big?
It's comprehensive. The ACTU, in fact, every year does the most comprehensive analysis of what's going on in the economy and in the society, and this one's no exception. One doesn't have to agree with perhaps the overall thrust or even any of the detail to say that it is again an admirable and important effort, and it's a very useful resource. I think what is unique this time around the ACTU submission, besides the claim itself, is how it is trying to put pressure on the Fair Work Commission about closing the gender pay gap. Because in December 2022, this Labor government made changes to the Act that required the Fair Work Commission in its annual wage reviews and other decision-making as well, to it had to consider the opportunity to reduce the gender pay gap in its decisions. And they dodged the issue last year, and the ACTU is trying to pin them down more precisely this year. And there will be a lot of argy-bargy about this. Now, what the ACTU is saying about that is that under the legal framework of its decision-making that's provided by the Fair Work Act itself, the Commission can make a decision that in which grants a higher increase that would help to close the gap in those industries in which there are big numbers of women working and in which there is a gender pay gap and in which it's because it's been brought about by gender discrimination in pay arrangements over the decade. So that is going to be, it'll be interesting to see how that develops.
Are you saying that they're arguing for two minimum wages?
No, I think what they're going to do is...
That's an oxymoron, I know, but you know what I'm saying.
They're going to say that, remember that it's not just about the national minimum wage.
Yeah.
It's also about the pay relativities in each award. And in some awards more than others, those percentage pay relativities based on the level of knowledge and skill that you bring to the job,
yep.
They have a gender discrimination element in them that creates the gender pay gap.
Yep, and that's right. What you're saying is that some jobs are more valued by the society than the others. They've been overvalued or the others have been undervalued.
In wages... dollar terms, yes.
Yes. And probably in mental and psychological terms as well.
Well, the important point is that it's based upon gender discrimination against women.
Yeah.
That's the critical point. Now, and so the ACQ says there is nothing in the law that says that in making a decision, the commission could grant 5% or whatever it decides to do, plus make a supplementary element or an additional element, but because this is last year, an additional element that refixes that closes the gender gap, pay gap in particular awards.
Yeah, I understand. And so what was the Australian Catholic I can't remember the entire group name of that group. Why did they say 4.9%? What was their reasoning?
Well, I've read that their submission, and I don't really understand. But what is important about their submission? I mean, substantially, it's just, you know, it's so close to the ACTU submission.
Okay.
But what is really important about it? Is how much they do two things. Firstly, they emphasise the importance of the decision in closing the gap between people on low wages and the poverty line.
Right.
Now, they put a lot of emphasis on that and they argue it out. And then they do something very interesting, very provocative in my view, and I think needs to be listened to, watched, and understood by union activists. What they say is that the statutory requirement, the legal requirement on the commission, is to deliver a result that is that provides a safety net for low income workers, for low wage workers. And they argue that given the number of pay rates that are below the poverty line, that therefore they are not fulfilling their statutory duty properly if they don't lift wages sufficiently to bring all workers up to and above the poverty line.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Now, that's a very interesting argument. It breaks the dominant dogma about how the Fair Work Commission itself says it will, how it interprets the text in the law to make its decision.
Oh, that's fantastic, because what's been going on, and it's quite clear, is that they're suppressing Social Security payments because they don't want to increase the pay of low-paid workers. Well, that's my assessment.
Yes, well, that's another angle I haven't really thought through, and I think there would be some really good commentary to come from various quarters about that, including, you know, the people from the Catholic Council for Employment Relations themselves. I think this is a very provocative argument, and it's worth thinking through a lot more as a practical thing. Now, we're going to run out of time, so I just wanted to finish with this, and that is that all of this, and also this also includes the struggle over new jobs in the new industries that are desperately needed to deal with climate change and to get rid of the fossil industry. And so this is all relevant to the struggle over jobs. And that the context we have at the moment is that the economy's in the doldrums. It was in the doldrums for about 3 years before COVID. The massive injections of both fiscal money and also money from the Reserve Bank rescued the situation, but very quickly the global economy in general is in the doldrums and Australia is affected by it. We're not yet in recession, but the Treasurer is sensible enough to be aware that the economy is on the edge of it. Now, in that context, we keep in mind certain things. It's a profit system. We live in a profit-driven society. Profits overall are still on the rise. There's dips here and there. There's just been a dip, but they're rising again. That means, and because of the state of wages, that means the rate of exploitation is still trending upwards. There has been a recent fall in the rate of exploitation, marginal, relative to the past, but it's increasing again. So we've got a big volume of profits still happening. The employers are still not investing out of those profits, out of their own voluntary commitment. In other words, the private sector rate of investment out of their profits is still declining, despite, that's overall, despite a recent small increase. Now, from there, we go to the rate of profit. And here, the Australian data is a bit all over the place. It is very clear that there was a falling rate of profit before COVID. That seems pretty clear. I've been doing my own research on this and trying to work it all out. And I think there has probably been a recovery in the rate of profit since COVID. In other words, profit relative to the total investment of both the productive machinery and equipment and buildings plus the wages spent, that is rising.
So we are coming really close. So what you're really saying is that the government is throwing in public money because the employers and the money class are refusing to invest.
I think I'm saying three things in brief. One, the health of Australian capitalism, or the health of Australian capitalist class, is driven by the rate of exploitation, not by their own investment motivation.
That's right.
The second thing is that means there has been massive irresponsibility on the part of corporations, private corporations, when it comes to the need to shift to a green economy.
That's right.
And then thirdly, when it comes to living standards, they are ripe. They are in good condition at the moment to afford at least a 5% pay rise.
Yeah. Good on you. Thank you. Right at to the end of the call. Thanks, mate.
No worries. All the best. Bye for now.